¿Quieres mejor internet? Cox Internet de 300 megas tiene las velocidades rápidas y confiables que buscas. Perfecto para streaming y gaming y trabajar desde casa. Todo por solo $45 al mes cuando agregas Cox Mobile. Incluye equipo de Wi-Fi y garantía de precio de 2 años en tu plan. No esperes. Cámbiate hoy a Cox. Requiere Cox Mobile Gig Unlimited. Garantía de precio no incluye impuestos y cargos. Velocidad de datos móviles se reduce después de 20 gigas al mes.
They said he could feel a bullet coming before the trigger was pulled. Just think about that. Imagine that whisper spreading through the jungle. A rumor, then something more. A legend. Today, we're doing a deep dive into exactly that kind of enigma. A figure from the mountains of Laos, so effective, so unseen. They called him the Insurgent Ghost. Some even whispered he was Laos's own real-life Luke Skywalker. Our job here for you is to try and unpack these fragmented accounts. We want to sift through the legends that just won't die, look really closely at the sparse details clinging to the name Luang Saung. We're essentially piecing together whispers from a past that seems, well, determined to stay hidden, exploring how fact and folklore just blur together.
And that blurring, that's exactly where we need to focus our critical lens, isn't it? I mean, the moment you call someone a ghost, you're admitting up front there's ambiguity, there's a lack of, you know, the hard, tangible proof history usually demands. So our task isn't just what the stories claim, it's also why they had such power, why they resonated. How did this narrative build up and stick around even without that solid evidence? We're looking at something woven from memory, from the sheer pressures of wartime, maybe even from a deep need for heroes. We need to understand how those things shaped what people saw, or thought they saw, made the incredible seem potent. Terrifying even to his enemies.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning of this myth. The setting, 1974, the mountains of Laos, try to picture it, absolute devastation, the smell of smoke, dust everywhere covering bombed out homes, and just this constant background hum of fear, you could almost taste it. It's from this chaos, this absolute wreckage of a bombing raid, that Luang Saung emerges. He's 19, an orphan, literally pulled from the ruins. He wasn't, you know, born into legend, he was found in the destruction. A survivor thrown into a world of just unbelievable hardship and loss right in the middle of a brutal war. His start isn't just a detail, it's the traumatic foundation his whole story is built on.
And that context, that starting point, is absolutely vital for understanding how these legends catch fire. In times of intense violence, displacement, societal breakdown, people who survive against all odds, they often become more than just people in the collective mind. They become symbols. They carry the weight of trauma, sure, but also, crucially, desperate hope. Luang Saung's story pulled from the wreckage, like a phoenix's set. It immediately gives him this air of resilience, of having somehow cheated death right from the start. The sheer fact he survived when so many didn't, it starts to build this aura. Suggests something beyond luck, maybe destiny. This kind of hero rising from impossible beginnings is, well, it's a classic part of myth-making everywhere.
But then his path takes this even stranger, more hidden turn. He wasn't put in a camp, not an orphanage. No, he's taken in by this shadowy figure, a reclusive mechanic. And let's be clear, this isn't just some village tinkerer. This guy operates deep in the war's shadows. He had this incredibly specialized practical knowledge, the kind that literally meant life or death. Under this mentor, Luang learned more than just survival. He was trained meticulously to fix aircraft. Think about that. Complex machines, engines, hydraulics, often with barely any tools or parts. He learned to strip military rifles down to nothing and put them back together blindfolded. He understood lethal force almost instinctively, and maybe most amazingly, he learned to build weapons from scrap, just pure improvisation from the war's debris. This wasn't just learning a trade, it was an apprenticeship in covert warfare. It made him formidable long before the insurgent ghost name surfaced.
Right, and this is where moves beyond just survival into real strategic capability. These skills, aircraft maintenance, weapon repair, weapon creation, these aren't basic things. That's high-level technical expertise, a massive advantage of that kind of conflict. Someone like that isn't just another soldier. They're a critical asset, a force multiplier, invaluable to one side, incredibly dangerous to the other. In guerrilla warfare, where supplies are thin, a mechanic who can keep gear running or make new gear from junk, that's huge. But what also adds to the mystique is the mentor himself being so reclusive. His isolation means his own background, his connections, his past, it all stays murky. No easy answers about where Luang's skills really came from. Instead of grounding the story, the mentor's secrecy just amps up the mystery. It feeds the legend. The lack of a clear history for the mentor creates this almost archetypal, wise teacher figure, which fits perfectly into the hero narrative.
So this intense, almost secret training set the stage. But the legend really starts to crystallize around one object. And this is where things get, well, almost mystical. the discovery of the Whispering Blade. Among the few things this reclusive mechanic owned, Luong finds it, a handcrafted carbon steel blade. Sources say it wasn't fancy, it was functional, designed for brutal efficiency, purpose-built. But here's the twist. The mentor himself, he was a pilot who'd vanished years earlier, another life just gone into the shadows. Think about that. Two lives, both marked by unexplained disappearances, now linked by this one enigmatic object. It adds this whole other layer of mystery to a story already full of unknowns. The blade isn't just inherited, it's like this symbolic link between two vanished figures, hinting at some hidden lineage.
And the blade's origin immediately makes you pause, doesn't it? Makes you question. How does a vanished pilot, especially one living so remotely, end up with such a unique, specialized blade? Was it something from his own hidden past? A souvenir from some secret mission? Part of an old life? Or, maybe, could the blade itself, its nature, its secrets, have played a role in why he vanished? These are the open questions that just tangle up any simple explanation. The fact that there's no clear, verifiable history for such a distinctive weapon, it makes you suspicious of any straightforward story. Or rather, the lack of any story. It turns the blade from just an object into maybe a key to something much bigger, something untold, a silent witness.
And then you get the most intriguing, maybe the most unsettling rumor about this blade. Whispers among locals insisted it wasn't just a well-made weapon. It was supposedly part of an abandoned U.S. Special Forces project designed to cut through almost anything. I mean, just consider that claim. Not just sharp, but capable of cutting through almost anything.
That
elevates it way beyond craftsmanship into, like, secret military tech, almost science fiction for the time and place. It suggests materials or engineering far beyond what was common knowledge, hidden away, maybe lost, then found. A secret history becoming tangled up with Luong Sayong's legend.
The implications are huge, yeah. But notice how strategically vague it is. That's often a sign of a potent myth. Abandoned U.S. Special Forces project. Perfect for a legend because it's fundamentally untraceable, isn't it? How could anyone possibly confirm or deny a secret project that was then abandoned? It lets you claim the extraordinary without needing proof. So you're left wondering, is it actually a piece of advanced, discarded tech that somehow ended up there? Or is that story just a way people tried to explain an incredibly effective blade, attributing its power to a mysterious, powerful source? The cutting through almost anything part, that pushes physical limits. It suggests something almost impossible. It's compelling detail, for sure, but it absolutely demands scrutiny. It injects something almost supernatural into the mix. It shows how readily we attach these evocative, but maybe unprovable backstories to exceptional things or people. Helps cement their legendary status.
But maybe the detail that truly seals the blade's place in the legend, the one that gives it that eerie, almost alive quality, is the sensory one. Locals swore they swore that it made a faint hum when swung. So it's not just silent and deadly, it sings. It has this unseen energy, this unique vibration. Imagine hearing that. A faint, maybe barely audible hum in the jungle quiet, or when tension was high. It changes the blade from just an object into something else, something with its own life, its own power. That detail, maybe more than any other, weaves it right into the myth, makes it a living part of the insurgent ghost,
Yeah. Like
an extension of his own mystique.
That eerie hum is, well, it's a masterstroke of myth-making, psychologically speaking. It bridges the gap between the ordinary and the extraordinary beautifully. From one perspective, could easily be psychosomatic, a sound people attributed to the blade because of fear or awe or intense focus during combat. Or maybe there was a subtle acoustic property. Unique material, the carbon steel, the way it was made, balanced. Air friction. It's not impossible. But regardless of the actual physics, for those who believed, that hum became proof. Tangible sensory evidence anchoring the incredible claims in something perceivable. It's a classic example of how, especially under stress or when lacking clear explanations, we attach these kinds of ambiguous sensory details to things that seem exceptional. It turns the tool into an entity, makes the blade an inseparable, almost sentient part of Luong Sayong's legend, provides an auditory anchor for the whole story.
So you have this figure, armed with incredible training and this mysterious humming blade. He doesn't stay hidden for long. By 1976, he moves from the shadows of the workshop into the thick of the conflict. He joins a small resistance cell, takes his isolated skills onto a much wider, much more dangerous stage. This is his public emergence, really. The point where his abilities start making waves, solidifying that legendary, almost supernatural reputation. He stops being just an individual and starts becoming a force, a name whispered in fear by his enemies.
And this directly links back to and really validates all that earlier training, doesn't it? His skills in sabotage, weapon crafting, maintenance, and you have to assume highly developed observation, maybe intelligence gathering too, All that would naturally make him incredibly effective, even without any supernatural stuff. A person with that unique mix of technical know-how, ingenuity, and survival instinct, they'd be a huge asset to any resistance unit. His effectiveness would seem remarkable, maybe even uncanny, to people who didn't grasp the depth of his preparation. He wasn't just a fighter, he was like a self-contained, adaptive weapon system.
And this is where the insurgent ghost moniker starts to make chilling sense. The stories describe abilities that just sound uncanny. They talk about Luong consistently hitting convoys before they even arrived at their target points. Imagine that. Intercepting supplies not just at known weak spots, but sometimes before they even reached planned routes. Striking with a precision that screamed foreknowledge. And then, even more unsettling, this claim of him sensing traps before they were set. Navigating that treacherous booby-trap jungle like he had a map of future dangers. Avoiding ambushes, mines, tripwires that should have caught him. It's more than just good tactics. These are the actions that fuel that core legend feeling a bullet coming. It paints him as someone operating on more than just intel, almost a sixth sense, moving like a phantom who knew what was next.
They're compelling accounts, absolutely. And terrifying for the other side, no doubt. But we have to consider sophisticated, non-supernatural explanations, especially in a resistance context. Feeling a bullet might be impossible, physiologically, but the effect of people believing it, that's very real. So what did you explain it? First, maybe exceptionally good intelligence, not just informants, but a deep network. Locals, maybe even insiders, providing real-time info on movements, plans. Information travels fast in those environments. Second, highly developed observation. Years living on the edge sharpens your senses incredibly, reading tiny signs, disturbed ground, animal behavior, faint sounds. A survivalist reads the environment in ways that seem magical to others. Third, maybe a deep intuitive grasp of military tactics and logistics. Knowing the land, enemy habits, resources, he might have been brilliantly predicting their moves, outthinking them consistently. And finally, don't discount psychological warfare. The resistance itself might have deliberately spread rumors, exaggerated his feats to demoralize the enemy and boost their own morale. But for the regime fighting him, whatever the real reason, the effect was the same. Absolute terror. Fighting an invisible, seemingly unstoppable force. Perception in war is often more powerful than reality.
And this terror became so real, so deeply felt, that his exploits gained this widespread, almost official recognition, even from his enemies. It's pretty remarkable when the people you're fighting actually name you. The regime called him the Insurgent Ghost. That title, given by the opposition, it's not just a nickname, it's a profound validation. It confirms the undeniable impact he had, the reach of his legend. It wasn't just stories told around resistance fires, it was something that caused genuine tactical fear on the other side. It shows how deeply he disrupted things, got under their skin, became a psychological weapon himself.
It's fascinating how regimes often, maybe accidentally, help build the myths of their enemies. By calling him the Insurgent Ghost, maybe they initially meant to scare their own troops, justify failures, paint him as this evil, elusive threat. But in doing that, they also cemented his status as this almost supernatural symbol of resistance for everyone else, made him larger than life. He becomes this incorporeal figure bullets can't find, like a spirit of the land fighting back. That official recognition from the enemy is incredibly powerful. It lends a kind of legitimacy to the extraordinary stories, transforms him from just a skilled guerrilla into something else. A mythic entity embodying hope for one side, dread for the other, shows how narratives, even enemy ones, take on a life of their own.
What comes next after his rise is this really chilling act of deliberate, well, historical erasure. The regime, unable to catch or stop the ghost militarily, tried a different approach, purging his very presence from the record. By 1978, just 4 years after he emerged from that rubble, every known photograph of Luong Sejong was systematically destroyed. Think about that effort. A conscious, widespread campaign to remove a man's face from history, to make him literally unseen. It creates this haunting void where his image should be. And ironically, trying to make him disappear from official records only made him more ghost-like. Known only through stories, not fixed by the concrete evidence of a photo, he became pure legend.
That systematic destruction of photos, it speaks volumes, doesn't it? It shows just how worried the regime was about his symbolic power. Were they trying to suppress a symbol that was inspiring resistance? Deny his existence to diminish his influence? Or maybe just stop the legend from growing even bigger, becoming even more entrenched? But the absence of photos, paradoxically, it doesn't weaken his image. It makes it stronger, more flexible in people's minds. Without a fixed face, you could project anything onto him, hopes, fears, ideals. The legend becomes adaptable, resilient. It's a powerful reminder of how official attempts to control narratives, especially through erasure, often backfire against the power of belief and storytelling. The unofficial legend fills the vacuum.
And then the story reaches its climax, a final act that perfectly fits the insurgent ghost narrative. No capture, no body, no clear end. Instead, witnesses swore he simply vanished during a night raid, taking the blade with him. Phew. Picture the scene. Chaos, gunfire, flashing lights, deep shadows in the jungle night, utter confusion. And in that chaos, he just wasn't there anymore. A complete, untraceable disappearance. It's the perfect ethereal exit, cementing the legend forever for those who saw it or heard about it. And the detail about taking the humming blade, that adds another layer. Suggests continuity, purpose, not just an end, like he moved on elsewhere.
The ambiguity of vanished during the fog of a night raid is precisely what lets the legend endure and evolve. In that chaos, anything's plausible, right? A skillful escape, capture without record, death with no body recovered in the jungle. The key phrase is, witnesses swore, not confirmed, but swore. That highlights the subjective interpretive element. It allows the myth of a magical disappearance to take root. And adding, taking the blade with him, that's crucial. It keeps the powerful symbol of the weapon tied to his ongoing elusive presence. The blade becomes a phantom too, suggesting he didn't just die, he transitioned, maybe waiting to return. It reinforces that idea that true heroes don't just end, they fade into the shadows ready for the next call.
Which brings us right to that powerful, almost heartbreaking line from the sources we looked at. Simple, but profound. The war forgot him. The people didn't. That's not just rhetoric. It highlights the incredible staying power of oral tradition, of cultural memory, official histories, government records, military reports they can try to erase, forget, move on. But the stories people tell each other, woven into the community, passed down, they're much harder to kill. They persist against all official efforts, living on in the hearts and minds of those who won't let their heroes fade.
Yeah, and that really gets to the core of why stories like Luang survive attempts at erasure. It speaks to fundamental human needs. What do these stories provide? They become vessels for courage, for defiance, for the deep longing for extraordinary figures in desperate times. In a world that often feels brutal and overwhelming, figures like the insurgent ghost offer a symbol, a sign that even the most powerful forces can be challenged, maybe even defied, by something elusive, almost spiritual. They offer hope, or at least a powerful narrative of resilience. That ensures the legend, with all its eerie ambiguity, lives on, echoing long after the records turn to dust. The stories we tell, especially when things are hard, often shape our reality more than any documented fact.
So our deep dive into Luang Seong, the insurgent ghost, has traced this path from wartime rebel through intense hidden training, past rumors of a strange blade, to his rise as a feared legend and his utterly mysterious end. It's a narrative tangled with threads of real military skill, potential advanced tech, psychological warfare, and just pure powerful mythmaking.
And what's truly striking is how the very lack of clear answers, the absence of photos or a neat ending, actually makes the story stronger, more resonant. The unexplained parts, the persistent ambiguities, that's exactly what allows a figure like the insurgent ghost to endure, not just as history, but as this potent, unsettling myth that still holds power.
So as we leave you with these whispers from the Laotian Mountains, remember that final stark thought, erased from records, not from stories.